end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Go. 3, 2, 1. Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Had a week off last week, apologies, holidays and just a bit of a break really, but it's quite nice, quite sunny down the New Forest, and Si and I met in person for the first time, so that was a good laugh and good to meet you, mate. That was all good. How are you doing this week?
Yeah, good, thanks, Annie. Yeah, it was good to catch up at last. It's all very well meeting over a Zoom video link, of course. But yeah, it was good to finally meet. And of course, we'll wait for Lee to meet him in person come October, I believe. Although talking about Lee, he's not here tonight. But in some respects, I'd much rather be in his position on a Mediterranean cruise.
It's all right for some, isn't it, really? But yeah. Especially when it's all part of the job that he does. So, fair play, mate. I'm sure you'll be listening. So, yeah, I hope that's all gone well. Quite a lot of Dolphin stuff happened in the last couple of weeks. But one thing I will quickly mention is that obviously it's NFL UK ticket week. Yeah, man, the normal carnage seemed to ensue, thousands of people in the queue, but a lot of people with some good feedback for it for a change, which is positive. They seem to have got that a little bit right. And to be honest, when I bought tickets through the Wembley season ticket holders bit as well, the queue flew down. It was really efficient. So fair play to them. But Si, everyone in the, a lot of people in the Dolphin UK fan club got tickets for yourselves, didn't they? All went to plan?
Yeah, it did. I mean, we obviously put in a request to the powers that be, and whilst we didn't get everything that we asked for, we had to be grateful that we did get some. So we were able to fulfil a bunch of ticket requests for a good proportion of our members who asked for them. So that was all good in that respect. And we got some pretty good seats. And the advantage of that, of course, is we don't have to join the mad scramble that transpired yesterday. Although, having said that, I did take a quick look to see what it was all about, and I joined the queue. And what I did like was the fact that they've introduced this queuing system. So you don't have to literally have your browser open if you didn't want to, and you get pinged when it's your turn in the queue, which I thought was a good enhancement to their process that they've not perhaps had in previous years. So I thought that was pretty good. And like you say, the feedback was positive, and a lot of Dolphins fans are obviously going to be going, and hopefully will take over that stadium.
Sounds good. Yeah, definitely. And a lot of people getting them a couple of hours after, not a couple of hours, but an hour or so after they open and stuff like that, which is positive as well, because I don't know if anyone's ever kind of looked at getting Glastonbury tickets or anything, but if you're not on in within like 2 minutes of it opening, there's just no chance of getting tickets. So, yeah, that's quite positive as well.
It's funny, actually. A mate of mine logged on at 9 o'clock and was on in the queue straight away. So when it finally did go on sale, he was his experience was really easy. He managed to get on quite quickly, got the tickets he wanted and paid for them and was off. And he ended up queuing from 9 o'clock. So they obviously opened the queue early, which was clearly going to catch a lot of people out. But it's a lesson to learn for the future, I think. And if they keep this ticketing system, then always log on early.
Yeah, positive. And positive, like you say, so many Dolphins fans got the tickets. Hopefully that's a running theme, which we'll see with different fan bases getting the games that they want in the future. Cool. Well, looking forward to that. Yeah, it's not that long away now, is it? It's just like over a couple of months, isn't it? That's crazy. It feels like it's
coming out. Yeah, it's crazy to think the season kicks off very soon, doesn't it?
That's it. And that is a good preamble into the fact that we've had two preseason games since we last spoke to you all. A loss against the Bears 2013 and a win against the Falcons 37-17. I've watched most of both games. I think you've caught up highlights, Si, and stuff, obviously been a busy man. I guess we'll run through some takeaways from that then. The first one for me is just the fact that, I mean, it's easy to do, but Tua just looking very efficient out there, looking nice and accurate behind the offensive line. We'll talk about that in a bit more detail in a minute, but just like every drive, and Lee sent this as a point to make to us tonight, was the fact that every one of Tua's drives moved the ball down the field, obviously threw a pick against the Bears, which wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing pick you've ever seen in the world, but whatever pick is. But against the Falcons, every ball, every possession resulted in a point scoring opportunity and just really, really looked solid. Any thoughts, Si? Any kind of, you know, praise for Tua or any development points?
Nah, no praise for Tua whatsoever. No, seriously, though, I'd written down a similar point to you, actually, in that he's in a groove and it shows that he's confident, he's ready. And I think we couldn't really ask for a better preseason for the limited amount of time that he was on the field in both games. One interesting stat I saw Travis put out after the Falcons game was, I think he's the only quarterback in the league who has not thrown an incompletion in the first quarter, which I think he went 8 for 8 on in both games to start each game, which I thought is pretty good. And hopefully he'll continue those fast starts when they kick off the season for real. But you couldn't ask for more. He's looked sharp. And I say he looks confident, not only in the games, but he's looked really confident in camp as well, and which the general public perhaps don't get to see. But I think it's just as important, just so that he can get in that rhythm and get in that routine of playing well and making those long completions that we know he can do. So I think all positive from a Tua perspective.
Yeah, and a lot of people making something of the kind of leadership he was showing on the sideline as well, kind of rallying his teammates, giving them instruction. Those sorts of things are exactly what we want to be seeing. Last year, we kind of saw Ryan Fitzpatrick doing that with Tua, and not Tua getting up and like venting frustration, showing how to make the play and that kind of thing. So that's really positive to see. And, you know, that can only develop more and more as the season goes on. So just incredibly positive there. Obviously, I'll quickly mention the interception, which wasn't pretty, as I've said. Kind of stepped up in the pocket, tried to give the safety the eyes and ended up throwing it straight to the safety. The learning points, aren't there, mate? I mean, it's always disappointing when you see it. And obviously, a lot of people then kind of get on their high horse and say, look, he's not very good, et cetera, et cetera. Just a mistake, isn't it? And kind of you can forgive that at this point in the season. You know, maybe kind of a couple of weeks in, if we're seeing similar errors, then you've got to start worrying a little bit more. But yeah, nothing to really take away from that too much, is there, mate?
No, there isn't. I mean, it's not the interception itself is not important at this stage. It's whether he can learn from it and not make the same mistake again. That's the key thing that he needs to take away from that interception. And like you say, if he continues to make those bad reads during the regular season, then obviously there's a bit of an issue, but he doesn't strike me as the sorts of quarterback that would repeatedly make those errors in terms of how he's learning now. So I think in the whole scheme of things, you've also got to remember that interceptions are going to happen throughout the season anyway. It's part and parcel of the game, but it's the type of interceptions, whether they're mental errors or whether they're just a bad throw or whether it's the receiver's fault for not doing the right route or whether it's just simply at some time you've got to give credit to the defense for making a great play. So you've got to look at the reasons why he's making the interceptions as well, but I'm not concerned for the sake of one pick in preseason.
Exactly. And on the defensive side of the ball against the Bears, I mean, absolutely phenomenal. I don't think they got a first down with their starting offense on the field and our starting defense. So that was really, really positive to see. The Falcons, I think they had a bit of luck in the run game early doors, a couple of first downs. I punched it up the middle, which is seems like a possible continuation from last year, but we stamped that out quite quickly. All round, a couple of really, really good defensive performances, and a lot of people were making a big deal out of Justin Fields' performance with the Bears, but playing against third, fourth string defense by the time that came into play. So it's all you know, we've got to take a bit of a pinch of salt in terms of how good the Dolphins' defense, but also a heap of salt with how good people were going after Justin Fields. Go on, Si.
Yeah, talking to Justin Fields, and you'll probably know this better than I, having studied the college game a lot more, are the third and fourth stringers that he would have faced in that game comparable to what he was facing week in, week out at college? Or would you say there's, because it's the NFL, they're still a step above what he used to face? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, both really. I think the kind of, when he kind of diced apart the Clemson defense in the national championship, no, national playoffs, college football playoffs, one of them. This year, he, like, that was NFL caliber defense, and on Clemson, obviously, they've got some fantastic players. But week to week, he would have been facing players of a lesser caliber than that Dolphins defense for me then, to be honest. I mean, obviously, you still get a couple of stars on any kind of Big Ten defensive side of the ball, but In reality, there's a couple of guys that are now flipping burgers or working on Wall Street and stuff like that at those universities instead of playing professional football. So, yeah, a bit of both, really. But, I mean, if I was a Bears fan, I'd be very happy with what I've seen from Fields this preseason. But I think it was a bit of a leap to go. People were comparing him to Tua, weren't they, and saying, oh, I'd rather have Fields for the next 10 years than Tua. I mean, I don't know what you're basing that on, guys. The better college quarterback for me was Tua. You've never seen a college quarterback with such efficiency and accuracy than Tua. Fields has got a great arm and like, you know, adds something in the run game as well as a bit of a bulldozer. But I'll stick with Tua for now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Fields has not played a proper down in the NFL yet, so to make those comparisons now is just nonsensical, really. And I'm sure he's going to have a great career. And he came out with a great quote when, in response to a question he was asked when he, with regards to the fans booing Andy Dalton, it was a very mature response. So I think if he can maintain that level of maturity and show that on the field, then I'm sure he's going to have a great career. But to compare him to and say that he's better than Tua now is just a nonsensical argument, really.
Yeah, totally. I'd have liked to see him throw against Howard and Jones, that's for sure. But that'll happen in the future, I've no doubt whatsoever. Another quick takeaway then, I think the run game, I think in the first game it was Malcolm Brown going onto the field first, Q panic, Q kind of what's happened to Myles Gaskin. Second game, Myles Gaskin comes right out of the blocks, making big chunk plays in the passing game, a couple of nice bursts in the run game. I think Myles Gaskin's got this job locked up, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he hasn't got the job locked up after a performance like that, then there's something wrong. So there's no doubt in my mind that Myles Gaskin is going to be the starter week one, as we all thought anyway, not just for his own performance in that game, but nobody else has particularly snatched the job away from him. So you've got to think that Myles Gaskin is the starter, but don't be surprised to see regular doses of Brown and Ahmed as the season goes on. And who knows what Jared Doakes is going to contribute. So, but overall, I think, yeah, Gaskin is going to be the clear number one for this year, at least.
Yeah, there was one glaring pass block fail from Brown against the Falcons, I think. So need to see a bit more from that. I think that's one thing that the Finns running backs in general could probably do with a bit of bolster on is the run, but the pass protection, sorry, not run block, the pass block. That's obviously such a vital aspect of the modern game. And I can't remember who it was, but it beat Brown so quickly off the outside that Tua wasn't able to step up in the pocket. So just that'll be something that's on Brian Flores' mind. I know a lot of NFL coaches will pull a running back for that sort of thing. So, yeah, let's hope that gets sorted.
I just wonder if, on that note, actually, with regards to pass blocking from backs, whether they'll try and use Keith and Carter in that sort of fullback role as a lead blocker, because he's clearly behind a few of the other tight ends in terms of their receiving capability. So I just wonder if they'll utilise his skill set and whether he'll become a blocker for Gaskin or whoever in that role, given the fact that there does seem to be a question mark or two around Brown's blocking capabilities.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good shout, actually. We do need to see more fullbacks involved, don't we? I don't think we had a fullback on the roster for a bit, didn't we? But I think, has he been cut now? I can't remember what.
Yeah, he went. Was it Chandler Cox? He went a couple of years back, didn't he?
Yeah, crazy, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I do love running out the I formation. That's my thing where I like that. That's proper old school college football. But we'll get a bit. I don't think we'll be seeing that very, very often in this Dolphins offense for sure.
I don't think I've seen an I formation since playing Madden, to be honest.
that's my go-to on Madden, actually. Just nice I formation to the right, and it's perfect. Another, on the subject of pass blocking, we'll quickly talk about the O-line then. A lot of panic after the first game, still not sold after the second game, but emerging with some positivity. Liam Eikenberg looked good on the right-hand side of the line. Admittedly, I think he moved there against the against the Falcons' depth players, but he's been practicing there in this week. I can see the tweets flowing in from practice today saying Eichenberg's protecting the right side of Tua really well. Seems to have kind of found his feet there. And Lee's also sent a message on the O-line saying he completely understands everyone's concerns. But when you think about it, Tua moving the ball down the field, you know, he's comfortable behind that line. Obviously, it's not great, but they're not getting him killed. If they can kind of work with what he's got, then it might not be the worst O-line in the world. So your thoughts on that, Sire? I'm still fairly worried.
Yeah, I mean, it was promising in the sense that Tua did get enough time to pass the ball. I think he was only sacked once out of those two games in the time he was on the field. So from that point of view, it was a relative success. But they are still a work in progress, of course, given the fact that they're all so young, or most of them are young anyway. And on that note, I think Brian Flores has come out today and said that most of the O-line will actually play against the Bengals this weekend, with the exception of our old favourite Jesse Davis, who's a veteran and doesn't necessarily need to play, but all the others perhaps do need those reps, not to do anything other than give them game time and progress and working together as a unit and developing in that sense. So I think, obviously, there's always that risk with injury, of course, but that goes with any position. So, but the important thing there is for them to continue that development and get more reps under the belt in order to help throughout the season.
Exactly. I feel that that's, obviously we brought in, I think it's Greg Little, maybe you've got the wrong name. Yeah, brought him in as well, which I spoke to a couple of mates from his, who support his former team, and they were not positive at all. So I don't know whether he's going to make an impact, but, again, it shows that the coach and staff's willingness to kind of address deals and try and find a bargain where they can, obviously, form a fairly high draft pick as well. So, if that comes good, then fair play, but not expecting a whole lot there unless you've got some other intel which tells me that he's going to be the best thing since sliced bread.
No intel, but what we've talked about in the past is that the coaching staff have got a lot of self-confidence in being able to develop players like Greg Little. So I think if they continue to show that confidence in being able to enhance players' development and get them on the field, then obviously that's a great move for the Dolphins for very little cost. If he doesn't pan out, then they've not lost much, essentially. So it's a win-win situation with regards to him. He's got some pedigree, obviously, because he came out of college in the second round of the draft, I think. So there must be something there, and hopefully the coach can recognise that and bring that out the best in him.
Yeah, fingers crossed, mate. Fingers crossed, because that'd be a nice addition if he can come good. Right, a couple of other bits of news then, aside from the takeaways. We've got some wide receiver cuts, which interesting early doors. Isaiah Ford, Mr. kind of on and off the roster. I mean, I bet he gets about 30 and he's just still getting signed for the preseason, then cut again. Now, I just don't, what do these guys do when they're not on a roster? Because it must be really difficult to kind of play for like a few months. Then, surely he doesn't go and get a job because he's probably just like keeping in shape in case anyone calls. But what do these guys do? That's fascinating. I don't know what they do. But,
Live out of a suitcase, probably.
Yeah.
I would imagine, really. Because they can bounce around from team to team. Somebody who's on the bubble like Isaiah Ford can easily find himself in Timbuktu if he's not careful. But he's got to be used to it now. He's been cut so many times and by the Dolphins that it's just part of a normal day for him, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It just feels like, how do you live a normal life? I mean, I guess they don't really. I guess that's the kind of the dream he's chasing is not a normal life, and he's willing to make the sacrifices. But I mean, it must just be so infuriating when you put all this effort in and then come the business time of the season, you're like, right, I've not got a team again and I'm swimming around the outskirts. But yeah, very, very disappointing for him, I guess, but no real surprises. But maybe what was more of a surprise is Robert Foster's joined him as being cut as well. We got a lot of positive vibes from Foster from the early days of camp. I think I've said it on a previous pod. He was one of the first guys they sort of picked up in free agency. Your thoughts on that, mate, and your thoughts on Ford as well?
Not surprising with either, actually. I mean, if you look at they've got so many receivers on their depth chart that Foster and Ford were never going to be an obvious one to break into that top six or seven. The timing element is surprising, though, because I thought both of those would have lasted a little bit longer than the likes of Kirk Merritt and Kyle Loxley, who by all accounts have been relatively quiet, other than the fact that Kirk Merritt did catch his first touchdown against Atlanta, which perhaps has certainly worked in his favour. So the fact that they're off the roster isn't surprising. It's the timing of it that perhaps is, given the concerns that I've got over the wide receiver position in general in terms of players staying healthy. I mean, they missed six receivers in the Atlanta game. I think Wilson, Fuller, Parker, Williams all missed the game, as did Bowden and Ford, who, of course, now gone off the roster anyway. So it's a little bit concerning that they're starting to see. I'm sure they'll all be back for the regular season, but it's almost like it's a wide receiver group that can't stay healthy. So why not keep a few extra receivers on the roster until such time as they have to cut down to the 53? And obviously they must be fairly confident that they're all going to be healthy come week one, but it is a concern overall that they all seem to be getting these injuries. I don't think, with the exception of Waddle, who had that pre-existing leg injury, but he's maintained his appearances throughout training camp. I don't think he's missed too much time, if at all. I think all of the others perhaps have missed some time at some point. Maybe Grant hasn't either, but certainly the top ones, like Parker, Fuller, Wilson, Williams, they've all missed time.
Yep.
So it's a little bit concerning. They've got a wide receiver group that can't stay healthy, but we'll wait and see whether that continues throughout the season. Then you never know, Ford might be back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I do worry that we're going to end up chucking the ball to like Mac Hollins as a regular thing again, which isn't that's no disrespect to Mac Hollins, because he's been very, apparently he's got a good connection with Tua, and we've seen that in preseason stuff. He's like nice on a good breakout route to the sideline. He makes a good catch there and everything like that. But, you know, it's obviously not the calibre that some of the other guys are. Obviously, Alan Hearns and Bowden have gone on to IR as well, which we should touch upon. Bit of mystery surrounding the Bowden injury in particular, and it feels like he might be out for the season. I just, like, that's going to hurt his chances of staying on the roster. Wouldn't surprise me if they come to an injury settlement with him. I know you're going to tell me in a minute what it means that he's gone to the IR now rather than make it to the 53, because you told me that the other day. But it's like you say, I'm very worried with kind of Devontae Parker. We've not really seen him at all yet. I think he's back in training camp now. But, you know, the fact that none of these guys have practiced and kind of been a regular part of the preseason, it's just concerns me, because when you get to week one, you want everyone 100%. All good there. So, yeah, mate, tell me what it means that Bowden's been on there, or have you got that in front of you or not?
I have, yeah.
You have, good.
So, with placing Bowden on IR now, before being on the 53-man roster next Tuesday, they must reach an injury settlement with the team if they want him to play again this season. They need to reach that injury settlement, cut him, and then re-sign him after being waived. But obviously the downside to that is that he could easily be claimed by another team. So I don't think they are going to cut him or reach an injury settlement. I think they're going to stash him on IR for the season, and he's just simply not going to be able to play. Because he's too talented a player to simply go on waivers and not be claimed by another team, because they do like him. I think the reason, and given that it's only a hamstring injury, unless it's one of those really bad ones, and I didn't get the sense from reading the reports that it was that serious. Those sorts of injuries only last, what, 4, 5, 6 weeks at most. So I think they've done it to not only protect themselves from losing him, but also it partly solves the wide receiver conundrum in terms of who they're going to keep on the roster, and actually allows them to keep somebody else. Perhaps the likes of Jakeem Grant, who may have been on the bubble, or even a Malcolm Perry, who is still not very much on the bubble, I think, but given this fact that him and Bowden are very similar in terms of their skill set, might mean that they can get the best of both worlds. They can keep somebody extra on the roster and not lose Bowden.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good shout. And it would be good to see him back on the roster. I think he gives us something a bit different, doesn't he? He's a bit of a utility guy. And Lee would tell me off and say that he's not great at anything, but he's good at a few things and stuff like that. But I like him, man. I think he'd be good to stick around. He can play running back, he can play wide receiver, he's played quarterback a bit as well. So very good utility guy to have around.
So if somebody's on IR during the season, obviously his hammy's going to heal at some point. Can he practice?
You'd have thought
I don't
so,
know what the
yeah.
rules are.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're not going to hold you out of that, although I think you just need to activate to be on the in the game day sort of squad, don't you? So
So
anyway.
if that is the case, then that's another year's worth of development that he can get with regards to him training and in practice. So they'd like to think they'd continue working on him, and hopefully he'll be ready as a more prominent wide receiver next year.
Yeah. Exactly. So good stuff. And we're going to have a quick chat through the rest of the receiver position now, aren't we? In terms, obviously, we've just done that, but a bit more of an overview of how we think it's going to play out across the season. Good to dive into kind of who's going to be the primary receiver, really, which is a good question, I think. And like in previous years gone by, it's always been Devontae Parker since Jarvis Landry left. And now I think we've got three guys who could be the wide receiver one on our roster, which is a pleasant surprise. Obviously, Will Fuller's come in from the Texans, missing the first game, but kind of did everything right to be the number one guy for Deshaun Watson last year. You've got Jalen Waddle, who's one of the most electric wide receivers we've seen come out of college in some time. It's all about the speed and probably playing out the slots to begin with at the very least and used in motion, that sort of thing. And we've still got Parker on the roster, which like I said, it's been a disappointing thing that he's been injured for a while in the preseason and stuff like that. I'll start with him then, Si. I mean, do you think we can rely on Devontae Parker anymore, or is he now a bit part player and the focus should be on giving Jalen Waddle the ball?
It's almost like you want him to be a bit part player, because what it means is that they're going to be spreading the ball around the whole wide receiver core and not just targeting perhaps Parker like they would have done in the past because they've had nobody else. So I think if they are targeting, if Devontae Parker is going to be the wide receiver one, then does that mean all the other wide receivers haven't stepped up to the potential that we know they can do? You could make that argument for all of them, actually, because they all offer something different. So what is your definition, Andy, of a wide receiver one? Is it somebody who gets the majority of the catches, or is it somebody who gets the majority of the yards?
Yeah, I think it's for me, it's the playmaker you turn to when you either need a score or you need to get the ball down the field. Sharp is just it's your DeAndre Hopkins, throw the ball up on a Hail Mary and you've got a very good chance of coming down with it. It's a Julio Jones who you feed the ball into no matter where he's on the field and he'll come down with the ball, that sort of thing. And in many ways, Parker like should be that guy. He's got the build and the physicality, which like those two aforementioned receivers have got, but he's just struggled a bit, hasn't he? We've probably seen one completely dominant season where, that was in the down year when there was no real expectation on him to kind of be, or not on him, on in the team in general, really, was there? So that's the issue with Parker for me. I mean, I wonder if Jalen Waddle will take a bit of that pressure from him this year. He's no longer the highest drafted receiver on the team. He's like, obviously they play a very different style, but he's not going to be the volume guy that maybe he was under Ryan Fitzpatrick, where Fitzpatrick would force the ball to him, or like Gesicki was the wide receiver too then. But Waddle's now going to have that connection with Tua. Waddle's going to be the one that's like breaking out across the middle to kind of be the guy whose speed separates him very quickly. So Tua's got an else easy target there. So I wonder if Devontae Parker is going to be effective, but just not in the yardage front, which I think is the point you're making there, in that, like if are you the wide receiver one, if you get the important targets, then that could be Parker. I don't think he's going to get the volume or the yardage this year to kind of make him the statistical wide receiver one, but he could be the guy that comes up with the big plays when we need it. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you've got a potentially explosive offense with Parker, Fuller, Waddle, and Wilson. And do you really need a wide receiver one if you've got all four of those? I mean, this seems to me very familiar to the greatest show on turf. Now, I'm not putting them in that class just yet, but if you remember from that wide receiver core, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Marshall Faulk, who I know he's a running back. Who's the other receiver on that Rams team?
I'm not that old, mate.
Yeah, but they didn't necessarily have a clear number one because they all chipped in and they all got the yardage and the reception. So I don't think there's necessarily a bad thing if there's no clear wide receiver one. The main thing here is that they've got that as an offensive group, they've got the potential to be explosive, and that's what clearly this team and Tua need. It's something they didn't have last year.
Yeah, and I think it's a way to get, like, if you've got those three receivers in a fairly standard like wide receiver set, you don't need to be in trips or whatever. You can just have two on one side, one on the other, and then just run a standard formation. That combination of speed and physicality is going to be enough to also free up some of the run game as well. We've been saying the opposite, that we're worried that the run game won't free up the passing game, but the proficiency of that passing game could then free up space for Myles Gaskin in the run game.
Yeah, and what you might see as well, I think, is one week they might focus the game plan around the likes of Parker, depending on what the secondary looks like, and then the next week the focus might be on somebody like Jalen Waddle. And I don't think Brian Flores and the coaching staff are afraid to change that depending on the matchup of the opponent. And that's a good point, obviously, because it keeps opposing teams on the back foot because they don't know from week to week who the primary receivers are going to be in terms of the specific game plan. So I think to have a deep, fairly, well, it is a pretty deep receiver core, and we have to say, I think that's going to be a good thing from a week-to-week perspective in terms of what the matchups look like and what the game plan looks like.
Yeah, and on Waddle, I'm interested to see how people match him up. I mean, you could just go for huge yardage each week. And I was just racking my brain before we came on, who's a slot guy in the NFL who gets covered really well. And I'm struggling. I mean, obviously you've got Travis Kelce, that kind of guy who's effectively a slot receiver, and he just dominates because of his physicality. But in terms of pure speed, I mean, Tyreek Hill doesn't really play out of the slot very often, but teams struggle to cover him. Then you look at people like even someone like Jamison Crowder on the Jets, and you kind of often see Jamison Crowder's stat line as like 15 receptions, 100 yards, and it's because teams can't cover that quick guy over the middle. And I think that's everything that Jalen Waddle can be, but better. Yeah. Maybe not better than Tyreek Hill, but better than, you know, your average slot receiver. So that's really enticing in just terms of, it's going to be so demoralizing for opposition defenses if they cover Parker, they cover Fuller going on the go route, and then Waddle comes back to the ball and just picks up 6 yards, moves the chains, and just does that repeatedly, which is everything we want, isn't it, really? So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's going to be good, man. Yeah, and then you mentioned Albert Wilson as well, and what a kind of backup for Waddle in that role as well, because before Wilson opted out last year, he was the kind of standout player, you know, for a season or two, where he didn't get huge yardage, but the electric plays he came up with, getting the ball 5-6 yards past the line of scrimmage and then breaking for touchdowns and large yardage. So it's going to be exciting to watch him, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, remember a touchdown Wilson got against the Bears, I think, where was it Brock Osweiler threw a short pass and Wilson took it to the house, and it made it seem so easy. And we know speed kills in the NFL. So to have three guys like Waddle, Wilson and Fuller, who, you name me a quicker set trio of wide receivers on any other team, and then you'd struggle to name them. Yeah. So the potential there is enormous for them to be so explosive and so quick. If they can get that timing spot on and get the right play calls in, then they're going to be very difficult to stop, I think.
Just got to stay healthy, haven't they, mate? It's just always just keeps going back to that, which we've just talked about. And it's so like frustrating that might not be the case, but we'll have to wait and see, obviously. I don't think there's much more to talk about with the receiver position. I guess Will Fuller's one that we haven't really dug into a lot on this pod, despite the fact that he's come to the really good reputation in terms of playing ability. Obviously suspended for that first game, so he won't be not getting all the hype coming out the gates, but you know, the fact that we've signed Will Fuller and not everyone, he's going to be under the radar, isn't he? I don't think he's practiced a whole lot, but if he's back to full fitness after a week or two, then what a weapon to just kind of bring out and, you know, complement this offense. I wonder whether Tua's going to be hitting, you know, he's not going to be hitting as many deep balls as Deshaun Watson would do on each game and each, you know, each target for Fuller and stretch the field like that. But that one or two a game that he can get clear of, and it's just going to take the top off the defense, make them stand off coverage, and it's going to be so just different for this offense, isn't it? I can't think of a time where we've had that downfield threat for a long time.
Yeah, the one concern around Fuller is the fact that he's not been able to stay healthy. I appeared on the 2 Feet in Bounds podcast last night at the time of recording, and I talked a little bit about him on that and with Carl, and suggested that the one risk with Fuller is, yeah, I mean, we know he's explosive and can produce, but the one risk he's got is the fact that he's not managed to stay on the field, whether that's through injuries or obviously he's got an ongoing suspension right now. So he's not, he's obviously, he's not been as productive as what he can be, or he could have been. So it's always a risk there, but I think the risk is mitigated by the tremendous upside that he's got when he's on the field. So the you weigh up the pros and cons, and you certainly look at the pros in terms of what he can offer more so than the downside, I think. So he's certainly, you'd put him up there with the likes of Wilson and Waddle for sure in terms of his speed. It's whether he can stay healthy.
Yeah, for sure. And he'll be really helpful, I think, against teams like the Bills, who have got a better secondary when it comes to kind of man coverage. We know that Parker doesn't create the world's largest amount of separation, and that's been partly due to carrying injuries and playing when he's slightly hurt and stuff like that. But that differential in speed, I mean, I like the Bills secondary in terms of quality. Like Tre'Davious White's incredibly good man corner, but I don't think even he's got the pace to keep up with Fuller on a deep route. So just like really hope that we can have a couple of good pass block reps per game where Tua's got 3-4 seconds to throw whilst Fuller gets open down the field. That'll be key and very exciting.
It goes back to the offensive line again, doesn't it, in terms of whether they can keep the trenches secure and get that pressure, keep that pressure off Tua.
If not, it's going to be a stat line of something like 120 receptions for Jalen Waddle. Maybe it's just he's out the slot, throw it in a second, do your thing and go. So that's what we're going to see, if not. But that's probably not a bad thing, really, because as long as he doesn't get hurt, which I don't know if you saw in the preseason game against the Falcons when he took that blow off the ball and everyone was like panicking. God, that was a scary couple of minutes. And Lee and I were just messaging each other like, God, here we go again. But thankfully, absolutely fine. So,
and another point Lee made, actually, in response to his thoughts on today's topics, was that whilst that was a scary moment for Waddle, what was promising, I think, was the fact that he wanted to get back on the field. And that's a Brian Flores kind of guy. And you want to see that from your players.
That's a Nick Saban kind of guy first, I think, isn't it? Which is why he's done so well at Alabama. Yeah. But yeah, that's definitely a good point there. Right, a bit quick quarterback preview as well. I think we've said a lot of what we've got to say on Tua, but I guess it's good to just chat through what we're kind of looking for immediately as we start the season, how we kind of, you know, we'll judge him by the end of this year and that sort of thing. And also good to touch on Jacoby Brissett as well, who hasn't been bad at all in pre-season. So yeah, your thoughts, Si, on how you'll be judging Tua 3 or 4 weeks in, how you know you think, yeah, this is definitely the guy, and you know what we need to see to make that happen.
Yeah, given the schedule is going to be quite difficult over the first 3 or 4 weeks away at New England, playing the Bills, the Raiders and the Colts and the Buccaneers, of course, before a trip to London, I think it's going to be a key 3 or 4 weeks. You want to see him not necessarily set the world alight, because there's some pretty tough teams, but you want him to be confident, consistent, mistake-free, moving the chains, keeping the team in the game. And you would have thought the defense are going to give him some pretty short fields to work with a lot of the time. So there is going to be that opportunity to put points on the board as well. So you want to see him take advantage of those opportunities, essentially playing, not saying to the extent of being a game manager, because he's much more than that, but playing over the first 3 or 4 weeks, mistake-free football, turnover-free football, getting these teammates in the game, moving the chains and breeding that confidence that will set him up well for the rest of the season, when arguably he gets more of an advantage, particularly throughout weeks 9 to 15, when they've got a lot of home field advantage coming up in that period. So that for me is the key over the first 3 or 4 weeks, not necessarily to set the world alight. It would be nice if he could, of course, we want to see that, but playing that mistake-free football, showing that accuracy, getting his receivers involved and moving the chains.
Yeah, exactly that, mate. And I think for me, it's also about starting games quickly. We've seen it this in the preseason. We've seen him start games quickly, get the ball downfield. A lot of the back end of last year, we were kind of talking about, is this a second-half team? I don't really want to be coming from behind, you know what I mean? I just want to be killing teams off early if we can. If we can't, I want to be going punch for punch with them rather than having to claw things back. So that's really important, is getting the ball down the field early on. And that's part of that's the play calling as well, isn't it, really? It's about not being that conservative to start with. It's about kind of taking risks when you need to and just finding the matchups and working that matchup time and time again. And I think what I'd also like to see, which we saw against the Cardinals last year, is just that elusivity in the pocket where, you know, you've got three rushers coming, to a ducking underneath them, picking up 10, 15 yards with his feet. I really hope we see that consistently this season, because that's a game changer in this league, isn't it? I mean, we've seen, you see Kyler Murray doing it, you see Russell Wilson doing it. It's just such a, like, such a bonus when you see that free man coming towards your quarterback and he ducks it, turns out, does what he needs to do and picks up 10 yards instead of taking a really kind of demoralizing sack. So really hope we see that in his game as well. But if we don't see it every week, then, you know, it's not a massive flaw in his game, but just something that will really complement the accuracy in the passing game as well. I'd also like to see him being as confident as he can be when throwing on the run. I think that's going to be a lot of his game this year. A lot, again, like Wilson. Tua could really end up a lot like Russell Wilson as a style of quarterback, couldn't he, really? But that kind of getting out of the pocket when the line collapses, that sort of thing, and just finding his man. And that's where Jalen Waddle's going to come into his own, that kind of connection, going back to the quarterback. He knows where Tua wants him. He's going to be there. So that's what I'm really looking for as well. So,
it leads me on to a nice point that Dan Orlovsky made earlier today, I think, or it might have been yesterday, with regards to the RPO options that offense can run if they can get different layers of that scheme running successfully. Then he reckons that offense is going to be really tricky to stop, and you can see why, given the nature of how those particular players play. So I think that's going to be key as well. You're right, Andy.
Yeah, awesome. Sounds good, man. And then I also want to see that bond with the offensive coordinators. Obviously, I don't really know who's calling the plays in this preseason, and I don't think anyone else does, do they? So it feels to me like Dolphins are keeping that shrouded in mystery for a reason. But what I want to see is kind of Tua involved in that process, going over to the sideline where he needs to, getting involved with the play calling, being confident, and if he needs to be checking out of them at the line, just all that kind of thing which you see your established vets doing. I'm not expecting it every play, I'm not expecting him to be Aaron Rodgers straight away, but just kind of getting more and more comfortable with doing that and moving people around and just, like, you know, playing what he sees in front of him, basically, instead of trying to force something, which I don't want to accuse him of doing that last season, but it did feel like at times they were very cautious with him last season because of the way, you know, his ability to read defenses wasn't fully developed. That's something we need to see this year, isn't it, I reckon?
Yeah, it is. And you mentioned the play calling. I don't think from our perspective as fans, we should be too concerned about who is playing, calling the plays. I think all we know is for now that it's the quarterback coach, isn't it, that's going to be the voice into his ear. And I think that's going to be a good thing, because he's going to have that consistency on a week-to-week basis. He's going to get so he's not going to be confused as to whether it's which one of the OCs is going to be in his ear. So I don't think from our perspective we need to concern ourselves about who's calling the plays. As long as they call the right plays for the matchup that they're facing each week, then that's the important thing. I'm sure they'll get it right. I don't think is there really any particular advantage in us or the media not knowing who's calling the plays. Obviously, Brian Flores thinks there is, because he doesn't want to disclose it. But from a fan perspective, I don't think that really matters too much.
Yeah, I guess the only slight advantage you get is if you're familiar with the kind of play that you've seen, the play calling that you've seen one of these guys do before, a different, whether it's at college or, you know, even in like camp and stuff like that, you kind of know what they tend to go to in certain situations. But like, I agree with you, mate, I don't think it's a massive deal. It's just really intriguing more than anything, isn't it, to just see again the Dolphins kind of shrouding stuff in mystery. And like, in a way, probably quite good mind games, isn't it, to be honest? I mean, like, if you, like, for some reason, you just want to know who's doing it, so it's in your head, and you're like, who's playing, who's making this play call? And that's quite fascinating stuff, really.
I think it'd be interesting to see if there are any tendencies that materialise as the season progresses. Once you get a big enough sample size in terms of the number of plays that the offence run, it'd be interesting to see if somebody can analyse the plays and see if they can work out whether there are any particular tendencies depending on the down and distance and the game situation. But obviously it's going to take somebody with the time and the intellect to enable to analyse that sort of information. But it'd be interesting to see if that does materialise as the season moves on. But if it does, it doesn't really change anything, does it?
Sounds like an assignment for Lee because he's not here. Lee, that's your homework, mate.
On your cruise, Lee. There's your homework. When you sat on the deck by the pool with nothing to do other than a book, your wife can look after Olivia, and there you go. There's your homework.
Exactly that, mate. And just on Jacoby Brissett, then, I really like Jacoby Brissett. I'm surprised he hasn't got a starting gig in the league. I think he offers a good run threat. He's a kind of dual threat quarterback, very, very much like a power back as a quarterback as well, which is interesting. You don't see a lot of that in the league. He went 8 for 8, 99 yards and a touchdown at the weekend. It's just good that you're seeing efficiency from him. I don't think he's going to be called on a whole lot, but if Tua went down injured, I don't think the season's over, really. Brissett's like a good enough quarterback to get us by for sure. I mean, he's obviously had the full year starting in Indies from the Patriots system. So, yeah, what do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ideally, you don't want Jacoby Brissett to actually play one single down. One single meaningful down, because he might come on in late in the game if the Dolphins are miles ahead or miles behind. But he's a good insurance policy for sure. You'd like to think Tua's not going to get injured and he's going to show good enough form that Brissett's not going to be needed. But it's also, on the flip side, it's good to know that there is that insurance policy. So if he does need to go on and do a job, as you say, 8 for 8 against the Falcons, 99 yards, very efficient, very solid, one touchdown. You want to see that from your backup quarterback, don't you? You don't want another... I'm trying to think of a dodgy backup that we have had in the past that springs to mind.
Rosen.
Yeah, you don't want one of those who's now signed with the Falcons, I believe. Yeah. I saw today. So who knows? He might push Matt Ryan for a starting job. Not.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what you want from your backup, really.
I do wonder if we're going to use Brissett a bit like the Colts did last year and bring him on to get that 1 yard and just push the pile, because he's such a like thick set guy, isn't he? He's like really, he looks really powerful and we haven't really got a power back. I mean, Malcolm Brown's probably it, but I mean, get me Jacoby Brissett on him. No doubt about what he's doing whatsoever. He's just going to run the ball up the centre, and that's what I want to see. So yeah, sign me up for some of that.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him run a gimmicky kind of play like that, wouldn't it? I suppose. Well, not that a 1 yard pile up the middle is a gimmicky play, but you can see a scenario where he is brought in for a kind of gimmicky play with, you'd love to see it, don't you? So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's it. And it'd be good if we managed to rack up a score against the Pats early on in the season and he comes on to play against his former team. That'd be a nice storyline there as well. But yeah, a good move by the Finns again to get a just competent backup. I like the likes of, you hear about Chase Daniel earning, I think he's earned like $55 million in his career, and he's hardly played a single down, is it? But like you also don't trust Chase Daniel to come on and win you a game. He's there for experience and a like average to subpar like arm, isn't he? Whereas Brissett, like I said to you, I genuinely think if there was a need to, it takes a nasty hit or anything, then Brissett comes in and it won't be a complete different style of offense. So I think good job by the Finns.
Yeah, and you know that not only is he going to do a decent job if called upon on the field, he's going to be a good mentor for Tua off the field as well. We saw how Fitzpatrick was kind of playing that role last year, albeit the roles were reversed in terms of who was starting and who was the backup. But I think Brissett understands that it's Tua's team, but there's no reason why he can't be that professional and provide that mentorship for Tua that I'm sure Tua would benefit from.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I think that's us done for the week, and another week closer to the NFL season. I'll finish off with a quick get well soon to Si's brother, who's not very well at the moment. I hope you go well every soon, mate. I know you listen to the podcast every week, so shout out to you, David. Sione, anything you want to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, I'm sure David will appreciate that. Thanks for the kind words, Andy. But just a couple of things to finish up on. There's a podcast out on a YouTube video at the moment that I guested on the 2 Feet in Bounds show yesterday. So check out that. There's a link to it on my timeline at dolphin_UK. And also Raj, who has appeared on our show before, he's representing the Dolphins in a roundtable discussion with Carl again, who's representing the Patriots, plus the Jets and the Bills. So those guys are getting together shortly to have an AFC East roundtable discussion. So I'm sure we'll tweet that out as well once the links are produced. So keep an eye out for that, guys. And hopefully Raj will do us proud in representing the Finns later on.
We will, man. Content everywhere. Check it out. Season's nearly here. Season preview episode next week. So stay in touch for that. And yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Speak to you soon.